United States submarine base at Key West, Florida. A dispatch that quoted President Truman's press secretary, Charles Ross, as saying that President Truman has no knowledge of any secret project by this government that would give substance to the existence of such objects. Ross also said that both the Air Force and the Navy deny that such objects
exist.
Hi.
You want to know what's so funny? We come back after this hiatus due to your multiple surgeries, and you come back. Hopefully people can hear less congested than ever because you had like a professional nasal rotor rooter.
Yeah, I'm breathing right now.
And now I sound like Jabba the Hutt. So that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But, hey, what's up? My name is Noelle, and I don't know if I've said this out loud on this podcast, but I give the Mormons a lot of shit about their little soda shops, about their little dirty soda shops, because like they can't have alkies,
yeah,
and they can't have coffee.
Did you go to a soda shop?
Girl, not only did I go to a soda shop, but I have been fully converted, okay?
No, why? How?
Bitch.
They have flavored soda machines at the movie theaters.
Yeah, but you don't understand, bitch. I got a fucking Sprite Zero, first of all, hard to come by. I got a Sprite Zero with real raspberry puree and fresh squeezed lime.
Okay. I have been putting lime in shit lately, so I get
delicious.
It.
Delicious. And, like, that was me, like, dipping my toes and, like, calling it safe. It was so, so fucking good. And it was $3 for, like, an old school 7-Eleven XL cup. Like,
and those are lined around the block sometimes.
Yeah, girl.
Better than Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, because I get it, because they're cheap as fuck. They're cheap as fuck, and they're good as fuck. And, like, now I feel more bold to try like the Diet Dr. Pepper with like coconut cream and like, you know what I mean? Like one of those little God, they know
they're
doing.
One.
And I just have energy drink ones too, and they have water ones too.
I just never feel the urge to go get a single soda pop.
I mean, like I didn't go out of my way. It was like on the drive. I was like passing it. And I said, you know what? Actually,
the spirit of Joseph Smith spoke to you in that moment, like, and you're like, okay.
You know what? I'm actually going to fucking do it.
Let's see what these golden tablets are all about.
Well, this is the tea, though, is that this shit's catching on, bitch, because Dr. Pepper themselves, studying the Mormons, click-clacking around, studying them, because
they
did the Dr. Pepper coconut cream. Like, they're doing the like soda cocktails releases right now. And then I think they even had like a creamer you could buy separate to like dip in, which is a little sick and twisted to me, but I understand the hype now. So hey, what's up? My name is Noelle, and I am a newly converted Mormon soda shop girly. Who are you?
Ooh, I'm Chelsea. I am the Wookiee that Noelle is looking for and demands, I guess. Not sold on the Mormon soda pop shops, but maybe I could be. I'm not like the biggest soda drinker, but maybe I should dip my toe in.
I think like, here's the tea. We can't do Starbucks anymore. And so I hate to say it out loud. None of these like artisanal coffee places can make a latte.
Yeah.
Like a bitch making $14.25 at a Starbucks for it. And I've tried, it just doesn't hit like that. So I'm reallocating my funds.
Yeah. And Bjorn's Brews made me feel bad about the time that I ate the dog biscuit in front of them.
You ate a fucking dog.
They just let me eat it and swallow it. And they didn't say anything. They just looked at me with their judgmental little hipster eyes.
They were like, oh, okay.
Okay.
I will never forget that. It makes me sick to my stomach thinking about it, because not only did I drink it, but took a sip, but I had to pay for it. I went to Dutch Bros and I got a dirty chai, which is my, like, that's my girl. I love a dirty chai, bitch.
Not good.
I'm not even fucking kidding you. I felt like I was being gaslit. It was hot tea. It was hot tea. It was hot water with a cinnamon stick in it. And I took one sip and was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, and I paid like $8 for it. I would have rather have taken that like $8, got it exchanged for quarters and like fisted it up my fucking ass than have to pay for that hot dog water again.
Yeah.
So guess what always tastes good? A fucking soda, bitch, dude. They it's don't true. Fuck that shit up. So speaking of
speaking of soda pop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a segue. We're not talking about soda pop even one time. So
maybe
we're actually talking about Queen Elizabeth.
Was soda invented and around when she was in existence?
In the 1600s?
Yeah.
When was soda invented?
1767. Oh, that's crazy.
That seems
old.
That is old. I thought it was going to be like 1943.
You were going to say 93, bitch. You were like, I remember when they introduced it.
That's crazy pants.
What the fuck? In 1767, the first drinkable man-made glass of carbonated water was created by Englishman Dr. Joseph Priestley. 3 years later, the Swedish chemist Thorbjörn Bjergman invented a generating apparatus that made carbonated water from chalk by the use of sulfuric acid.
That makes a lot of sense. You want to know why? Because carbonated water tastes like chalk and it's sulfur from hell. So makes sense. And you know what? Speaking of hell, where the British monarchy goes,
Queen Elizabeth.
I don't know. She might be popular. She's popular. The first one. She's not directly responsible for Diana, so maybe she can have a pass.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure she's just like the original colonizer. Like she was the one who was doing fucking circles in her bedroom going, what if I genocided people? I'm pretty sure like they created it. They came up with it.
Yeah. They didn't not do it. But maybe we'll learn. We won't cover it at all. So Queen Elizabeth, the last Tudor monarch, passed away unmarried in 1603 at age 69.
Ha ha.
You're supposed to say nice. I was going to even write it into the script.
Well,
you know what? We can't always be 12-year-old boys, I guess. She is still celebrated for her remarkable influence and enduring charm to this very day until Google tells us otherwise.
I think she did something to Irish people. Like, I'm pretty sure it started with her. It's like, so.
Well, you know what? Just like the monarchy, we're going to be willfully ignorant to the fallout.
I think, there's one thing we can say as Americans. It's that the monarchy has never been good. They've never done anything good. So it's either hate or indifference, but I'm pretty sure she's the one who started the shit with the Irish.
That does sound right. That sounds right.
So anyway,
She was the daughter of King Henry VIII and his second wife, Anne Boleyn, who we all know and love. Her birth in 1533 was controversial and momentous because it followed Henry's dramatic break with the Roman Catholic Church, a move he made in order to annul his marriage to his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, and then subsequently marry Anne.
I just want to say this is one of my, we'll have to honestly take this chunk out and do a deep dive into when the Catholics made up divorce, or the separation of church because of divorce, because it's my favorite little bit of religious history that we see time and time again where people need something to happen. And then someone just wakes up from a dream and is like, you guys will never guess what God told me last night.
This is crazy.
You guys are going to lose your fucking minds when I tell you what God just said. And he said, you could actually divorce your wife.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Catherine just hung out. I think she stuck around too. Like, she was like, I'm the queen. And Henry's like, whatever, you're old. And I don't care about you. So the decision to just make up divorce led to the establishment of the Church of England. And Elizabeth's mother, Anne Boleyn, was famously executed when Elizabeth was just 2.5 years old on results of charges including adultery and conspiracy, which many historians believe were actually largely fabricated by her political enemies. And taking the throne after a period rife with religious strife, Elizabeth cleverly navigated England to a middle ground with Elizabethan religious settlement, which crafted a unique Church of England and calmed much of the tension between the Protestants and the Catholics. Those
quick question. Quick question. A lot of words are making like synapses fire off in my brain. Which was the how can I say this? What queen was it? Get your typing fingers ready. I'm phoning a friend. What queen was it that like her handmaidens and besties had to like fight to get her body?
Catherine Parr. I already know that.
After the beheading, to prevent dudes from like molesting and R-wording her decapitated body.
I think it was Catherine Parr's death. If she
it may have
die...
been every fucking queen ever beheaded, but like there was one really specific story that like they like had to fight.
No,
to
it
get
wasn't
her
Catherine
body.
Parr because she was the last one. Which the queens of Henry VII.
Because that you know what I'm talking about, right? Typhoid Taylor's gonna fucking piss her little panties when
Catherine
I say this out loud.
Catherine was the first one. He was not allowed to touch her. Boleyn was beheaded. Maybe
was
not
it
Jane
her?
Seymour.
No.
It wasn't Jane Seymour. She died in childbirth. Anna Cleves, was too ugly. It was Catherine Howard, I think.
Catherine sounds like right.
Catherine Howard was only 17, and then he had her executed, and then Catherine Parr was his last wife, so she didn't die.
Yeah, I was going to say, Typhoid Taylor's going to piss her little panties when I say this, because she's a theater girl in a big way, and there's a, like, Broadway show.
Catherine of Aragon.
Yep. About Queen the wives of Henry.
Yeah.
So,
I want to see it so bad. I actually really like that song.
And they're all like divas, like pop divas. Mm-hmm. What an interesting. Told me the story of how it happened. It was like these two like college friends who like were in their apartment, wrote the whole fucking thing. And then it became.
That's so cool.
Anyway, so maybe we have to watch that so I can understand this history.
We have to get like a Zoom meeting and make Taylor watch it with us because we can't do that. She would die. If we watched theater without her,
we would get bombs in the mail for sure.
Yeah. That's how, like, if Taylor were a witch, like the Wicked Witch that you would have to kill in some roundabout way, or like Tinkerbell, where you'd stop applauding for her, Typhoid Taylor would be you and I watching musical theater without her.
Yeah.
That's how you kill her. That's how, if she were a demon, that's how we would
fall over.
Her.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Just explode into a bunch of beautiful pink bats.
Just like in the middle of a Target, she just falls over.
She's like, no.
But anyway, again, more lore about the British being, you know.
It's a fun time.
Being British.
So her reign was a golden age of culture. That was when we witnessed the flourishing of English drama like Shakespeare and Marlowe. And it was the rise of seafaring prowess that defined British imperialism.
Oh, there we go. Oh, what do you call that? Uh-oh.
But Elizabeth did have a pretty unique blend of political acumen, cultural patronage, and a strong, sometimes enigmatic personality that left a lasting imprint on history, which makes her a figure of fascination and respect long after her death. And this historical backdrop isn't just to enlighten people about her, but to serve as a foundation for the ethical discussion surrounding the legitimacy of Elizabeth's own lineage. And this was actually crucially unchallenged due to her lack of heirs. So her choice could be traced back to the tumultuous marriages she witnessed within her own family. Obviously, her mom, Anne Boleyn, with Henry VIII. And Elizabeth saw firsthand how marriage could become a political weapon and potentially destabilize her reign, especially given the power struggles and factionalism that might incite amongst England's nobility and foreign powers. She was just like, fuck it, I'm not marrying. And also, in addition to that, she maintained complete control over her rule in her realm. And also, like, I have a typo here. What's going on? Well, you know what? Whatever. We'll just skip ahead. And the legality, but she just maintained complete control, and then she wouldn't let people challenge her. And that also went through to the legality of her mom's marriage to Henry VIII. Like, if people thought that maybe his marriage to Anne Boleyn didn't count, they really didn't have any political recourse at that time, because she was literally the only child of his left that could have done it. And then since she didn't have any children, it kind of just ended with her.
Yeah, it's real easy to rule a country and then colonize others when there's not a bitch yapping in your ear.
Yeah, and she didn't, any half siblings that she may have had were also girls. And at that time, like, she was still ahead at that point. So, so history played out, and any potential descendants never needed to defend their lineage or contend with the complexities and challenges of proving their legitimate claim to the throne. So thus, Elizabeth's life and legacy, regardless of origin, remains super pivotal, and it's untethered to the burden of succession, but influential enough to shape the course of British history. But just because she didn't have any heirs doesn't mean that there was zero complications. Her death actually set off a cascade of tumultuous events that reshaped England's royal lineage, stirred revolutions, and each disrupted familial lineage to this day. And the story of a succession that followed her demise was absolutely fraught. James I's son was executed. His grandson, James II, was ousted by William III, who was invited to take the throne, but William died childless, so the crown passed to James II's daughter, Anne, who reigned for 12 years. But upon her death, the throne was claimed by George I, a descendant of James I through the female line, which established the royal dynasty still reigning over England today.
That is so fucking messy, bitch.
I don't even know what I read. I feel like that's one long sentence.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to imagine that the royal family was anything ever than, like, just being puppeteered.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That by the people who actually make decisions, and they're just, like, the face of it. Because I have a very hard time believing that, like, some 10-year-old king was calling the shots. He was just, like, the face of it. And I think, like, that's still what we see today. So it's, like, the fact that they went through all of this fucking daytime soap opera drama for the show, just wild. Just, if you want to talk about white people buffoonery, it's the fucking royal family shit, dude. That makes no goddamn sense.
It's also so weird to me why people go through, like, a patriarchy line, because you cannot prove that lineage. But if you go through a matriarchy line, you can prove that lineage, because the baby literally comes out of the woman, and you can be that's the mom.
Yeah.
So that always just blows my mind. Maybe in this day and age, it's more provable. It's literally provable with science. But at that time,
At that time, the only thing you could really prove was watching a birth physically happen.
Yeah.
It's just, this was also the generation, dare I say, I don't know what you want to call them, time period, in which they invented merkins. They invented pube wigs to hide their genital diseases.
It was not a clean time.
No one was in the right of mind. This is where we got the Mad King disease. What is it? It's chlamydia, right? Chlamydia.
Or the syphilis.
I
think syphilis rots the brain, but
yeah, I think it might be.
You know what? Just throw a dart.
Both bad, but it's like, damn, all that for this, you know? Like, ugh. Anyway, I'm grossed out thinking about royal families. I can't. They're fucking weird.
I still want to go into, like, the Habsburg jaw or whatever, but there's not much story there.
Inbred, nasty, dude. Ugly motherfuckers. I just, like, dude, the inbreeding. Yeah. That's what we talked about it a while ago when we were talking about, like, people denying science in the face of seeing it, like, genetically. And it's like, how many fucking, you know, Habsburg jaw looking motherfuckers who can't walk and talk had to, like, pop out before someone was like, maybe we should stop fucking our brothers. Like, that's crazy.
And the fact that you can still see it to this day, too, because I think we did maybe a Patreon about the family whose parents were siblings and their parents were siblings. So three generations down and they have people who can't speak.
I mean, you want to talk about seeing it. Look at fucking Prince fucking Williams, bitch. You, that thing's probably at least three generations removed from incest, maybe. And you could still tell that motherfucker ain't right, dude. You could still tell those DNA genes are fucking scrambled like eggs. Like, you, all I'm saying is, I'll stay hating on the British man. You put a lineup of people, I'll tell you which ones are British. I'll tell you, I could see it. See it in them.
Fuck them. I will say, there is a very lovely girl, very lovely gal, governess, who listens to our podcast, who's 100% British, but she appreciates it when we say bruv, because it reminds her of home. And now I can't stop saying it.
Well, it's like my little and she hello. Doesn't live in the UK anymore?
No, she got the fuck out because she knows what's good for her. That's what
I'm saying. And we are saying that as Americans. The only time I'm proud to be an American is when I'm hating on the British. And I'll stand by that.
Yeah. That's the only time when I'm like, these colors don't run.
Yeah, I'm like, I bleed red, white, and blue, bitch. Fuck you. Yeah. Fuck the British. I'm going to go dump tea in the harbor, you fucking bitch. Yeah. Like, it's the only time I'm like, I'll pay the taxes. Just kidding.
It's like, I'm putting my tea water in the microwave just because I know that's how you kill a British person. That's how I know you kill a British ghost.
I'm going to take a fucking, I'm taking a flight to Mass and I'm dumping Lipton tea in the fucking water and I'm flipping off.
Yeah.
I'm flipping off the coastline. And I just hope that like at that, right when I do that, like fucking Prince William gets a migraine and he'll know it was me.
God, I hope so. He'll be dead within the year, I'm sure. No, the old one.
The old one. But they all have the same fucking name.
It doesn't matter.
God, anyway.
So I ask you, Noelle, then, why would a queen who was wise beyond her years and perhaps one of the most strategically intelligent people of her time risk such discourse with her lineage? Because surely a woman who made England famously her entire paramour wouldn't go to the grave content with strife upon her death. So it begs the question, what was her motive? And we may have to rewind a little bit to understand.
Was she, I don't know. I don't want to make her like a cool lesbian of history because I think she sucked.
Well, let's find out.
Okay.
Queen Elizabeth I's early life is definitely riddled with whispers of a deeply kept secret, evident from historical records and personal correspondence that have since come to light. So after her mother, Anne Boleyn, was executed and her status, Queen Elizabeth's status, was reduced to that of a royal bastard, her upbringing was then overseen by governesses, tutors, you know, just hired help rather than any direct royal supervision. At just 2.5 years old, she was formally declared illegitimate and Henry sought to clear the way for a male heir. Cat Ashley, whom Elizabeth came to regard with great affection, served as her governess and later was her close confidant and personal advisor throughout her life. Cat played a crucial role not only in her early education, but in also shaping her personal and political demeanor. Now, despite these early traumas, Elizabeth's education was nothing short of exemplary. She was trained by some of the best scholars of the time and received rigorous education that included several languages, history, rhetoric, and philosophy. This intellectual grooming not only prepared Elizabeth for her future role, but also instilled in her a lifelong love of learning. But there was a little bit of secrecy, too. At just 15 years old, Elizabeth found herself at the center of whispered conspiracies that reached the highest levels of power. In a revealing letter to the Protector Somerset, Sir Robert Tyrwhitt articulated a strong suspicion of a clandestine agreement amongst Elizabeth, her governess, Cat Ashley, and the cofferer, Sir Thomas Parry. And he didn't know the actual nature of the secret, but he definitely believed it to be treasonous by the nature of their staunch secrecy. Like, what a queen to be like, they're keeping secrets, and I don't know what it is, but I know that it's bad.
So she's not a lesbian?
Well, I'm not revealing anything yet.
Oh, my God.
His suspicions were aroused during the investigation into a scandal involving Thomas Seymour, who had allegedly sought to marry Elizabeth to gain power. Tyrwhitt's role was to extract confessions or find evidence of wrongdoing, and he believed that Elizabeth and her closest confidants were concealing their true involvement with Seymour or other plans that could
threaten the stability of Edward's regime. Now, despite thorough investigations, Tyrwhitt failed to uncover any definitive proof, which just led him to conclude that whatever the secret was, it was so well guarded by Elizabeth and her circle that they would rather die than disclose it. And this insinuation, set against the backdrop of the politically charged Tudor court, suggested that even in her youth, Elizabeth was enmeshed in the dangerous intrigues that characterized her father's regime. Now, this secret alliance is further illuminated by Frank A. Mumby in his exploration of Elizabeth's life. He noted, her unwavering loyalty to both Cat Ashley and Sir Thomas Parry. Now, upon her ascension to the throne, Elizabeth reinstated Parry to his office and later appointed him controller of the royal household, continuing to favor him and his family until the end of their lives. And this conduct led observers to suspect that Parry was privy to the monumental secrets that could potentially endanger the queen's life. Similarly, Miss Ashley's close relationship with Elizabeth, maintained through various personal and political storms, suggested that same confidential bond, with many historical documents highlighting her and Thomas Parry's unusually favorable treatment by Queen Elizabeth. In diplomatic circles, Elizabeth's personal life was also subject to speculation. Giovanni Michiel, writing to the Doge of Venice, not how you say it, but I'm going to say Doge, noted Elizabeth's firm stance on remaining unmarried, urging the Doge to maintain secrecy on this matter. Similarly, Count de Feria reported, based on reliable sources, that Elizabeth was probably unlikely to bear children, despite only being 26 at the time. He wrote in private, "If my spies do not lie, which I believe they do not, for a certain reason which they have recently given me, I understand that she, Elizabeth, will not bear children."
Great accent.
Thank you. I just go Cockney no matter what. I think that's Cockney. A poignant reflection of Elizabeth's personal feelings comes from a letter that she wrote to Lord Admiral Seymour in 1548, where she denies any intentions of marriage and indicates that if she ever considered it, he would be the first to know, which only highlighted her resolve to remain unmarried, which was definitely a decision shrouded in personal and possibly political motivations. You see, we're definitely getting to a conspiracy here that may not be too obvious, especially when I loop in Bram Stoker of Dracula fame, who really blew the whistle on the whole thing.
Oh.
Now, Noelle, this isn't your typical alien cover-up, cryptic code left by ancient civilizations. No, this one hits closer to the crown, Noelle. A secret so controversial because it suggests that the iconic Virgin Queen of England, Elizabeth, was not a queen at all. Because what if I told you, Noelle, that in reality, she was a goddamn man?
I will say I did not see that one coming.
Mm-hmm.
I was going with lesbian and vampire.
Sick, man, right?
Was not even on my list.
You know what? That's fine. They should always be at the bottom of the list.
Yeah. Didn't even come across my radar, honestly.
Like a vampire should be more likely.
Like, okay, if not a lesbian, then a vampire.
Yeah.
Well.
Picture this, because we're about to fill in the blanks. The Tudor era was a time of opulence and intrigue, where every corner of the castle could be teeming with whispers and shadows. And amidst this world of royal machinations, Elizabeth I rose as paragon of strength and wit, a ruler whose reign would be remembered as a golden age. But behind the portraits, the pomp, the absolute power, could there have been an audacious deception at the very heart of the British monarchy? Here's how the story goes. Young Princess Elizabeth, fragile and ailing, was sent away to Bisley for a breath of fresh air under the care of her devoted governess. The air was crisp, the environment serene, a perfect retreat for a little royal child. But fate had a tragic twist in store. Just as a visit from the formidable King Henry VIII was imminent, disaster struck. The little princess succumbed to a fever so fierce as she was gone before any true medical aid could reach her. Now, obviously, panic ensued. The governess was well aware of the king's fiery temper, so she was gripped with fear. And with the monarch literally on his way, she made a desperate decision that would birth a conspiracy lasting centuries. This village, scarce in its populace, really offered no replacement. There was no girl of Elizabeth's age that could be found. But
a boy?
There was a young lad known to the princess and favored in her playful company who ended up becoming the chosen one. In a frantic whirl of secrecy, this boy was dressed in the late princess's garments, which was an act that was so daring of deceit that it bordered on madness. But just like that, when Henry arrived, he saw not the cold body of his daughter, but a lively young Elizabeth, none the wiser of the switch. The visit went smoothly, and the king was oblivious to the truth.
If you're going to pull a little switcheroony on anyone and have them not notice, have it be the absentee king father of the 17th century.
Exactly. Like, he's going to fucking know.
He probably seen that kid once.
Like, all of his kids died.
Yeah. He has no fucking idea.
Yeah. And he's going to just come. You know, he's just doing it for like, oh, I'm still here. Just making sure that his backup little bastard plan was still good to go.
I mean, they could have probably put a 13-year-old on that thing and he would have been like,
just a grown ass man.
No, smoking like a cigarette.
Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Like, spitting image.
Yep.
But the ruse once set in motion could not be undone. The boy who became a queen had to continue the charade because revealing the truth was far too dangerous and the stakes were unimaginably high. So political chess pieces in a game where the players were none the wiser of the puppet master's identity set the course of history.
Identity. You what did I on say? That one a bit. You said identity.
I remember.
Yeah, it's okay.
Consider the queen's iconic image. Her face was thickly coated with white makeup. Her body was constantly draped in elaborate garments. And her neck was encircled by voluminous ruffs to hide her Adam's apple, perhaps?
I also like the idea that a bitch that was just bad at makeup is like, that was a man in drag.
Yeah. But
love that.
And these features became signature to her reign, but they also might have served an obvious purpose beyond fashion and vanity. Because according to those who suspect the truth of her identity, these satirical choices were strategic. They were meant to conceal masculine features and maintain a regal distance from her courtiers and subjects. And now we get to her lifelong celibacy, which earned her the title of Virgin Queen. Now, this aligns curiously well with the theory. She refused to marry, never bared children, and obviously that would explain the kind of strange political maneuver. It would have been a necessary decision to conceal her true biological identity. Any marriage or childbirth would literally expose the secret entirely.
I can buy that.
Yeah, and furthermore, Elizabeth's guarded behavior regarding her physical health adds layers to this mystery. She was very secretive about her body and only allowed her inner circle of physicians to examine her. And even then, she would often delay medical examinations until her conditions became unavoidable. And she instructed on royal decree against any post-mortem examination on her body, even after her death, because there was another veil of secrecy that had to be maintained, which again fuels speculation that she had a lifelong secret, physical secret, that she needed to take to the grave. So then you get back to the comments of Sir Tywin Tyrwhitt in 1549, which really lend historical weight to these speculations. He expressed the firm belief that there had to have been some sort of binding secrecy between Elizabeth's closest attendants, her governess, and Thomas Parry, who were sworn to never reveal certain truths even after death. And both Cat and Thomas enjoyed Elizabeth's favor throughout her reign. They received patronage and positions, which suggests that they were crucial keepers of the royal secret, and they benefited from it. But this is a very controversial theory, and it compels a re-examination of the known facts of Elizabeth's reign, now through a lens of mystery and intrigue. Could the celebrated ruler, seen by her contemporaries as a woman ahead of her time, have actually just been a person hiding a sensational secret in the annals of royalty? If so, this notion challenges our understanding of her legacy and ignites the imagination about what might lie beneath the surface of recorded history. Isn't that crazy that fucking Bram Stoker blew this open?
What was Bram Stoker just like, guess what, you guys? Like, what? How did...
He took all this historical shit... reading about it, and he goes, oh my god, she was a fucking man.
You know, Rob Stroker was a little messy bitch. I can imagine him doing this. That is interesting.
Is that a fucking fun one? Now when I like look back on some of like the Queen Elizabeth stuff, I am very interested. We should also do a Queen Charlotte one, because in history they paint Queen Charlotte as white, but it is very likely that she was not fucking Caucasian, which is also another conspiracy.
I mean, that's who, oh my God, who it was. Johnny Cash's first wife as well was like a really, like, she was a black woman, but has been like written in history.
Yeah. Vivian.
Like, yeah. Like, so, and I feel like there were also some like US presidents. God, I forget who was talking about it or where I read it. They were like, pretty sure actually that this was not a white man. This is a tale as old as time, honestly. So I would believe it. I would buy it.
Dude, if you look at paintings of Queen Charlotte, I understand, like, it just looks like somebody airbrushed the fuck out of her.
Yeah. Yep. Is that why Bridgerton has a black actress playing her?
Because
they're like, yeah, that's a black woman.
I like it when people play with that kind of stuff, like in shows, whether they want it to mean anything or not. But I love that they did that, because that's probably what she fucking looked like.
Yeah, that there are some pictures on here where it's even like they've made her complexion just a little bit, because all these other bitches were looking alabaster.
Yeah.
And they even hit her complexion just a little, just a dab shade light, like darker, which I think is, for this time period and the way that these girls looked, I think that was trying to say something.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And like, yeah.
Isn't that fun? We should do an episode on that, because it's like the conspiracy of whitewashed history. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, hey, if there's something I can guarantee the British royalty will do, it's whitewash.
Yeah. Also, Bridgerton season 3 comes out May 16th. So
I've never seen it.
You should watch it. I'm obsessed. I got the Bridgerton series wallflowers from Bath and Body Works, fully knowing that I'm not probably wouldn't be able to smell them.
Okay.
But they're like the Queen's tea, the Bridgerton study. And since I got a double shipment, I'll give you some. And then your house. But under the condition, Noelle.
But
I'm going to look directly into my camera. You have to plug them in. You have to plug them in and watch Bridgerton.
I might.
At least an episode. It's super fucking cute. It's just raunchy, sexy history, but it's actually done in like a super adorable way. And then it's a little bit modernized, where they take like modern hits and then they play it like in the royal court. So like Wildest Dreams by Taylor Swift, they have like the royal court playing it. So it's just like a little,
fun.
Yeah, it's like a little tahine in your cocktail. It's just a little,
little
something extra.
I know that people like it a lot, and I've seen like clips. I've seen like people doing the like, that one guy's monologue when he's like yelling at the girl and he's like talking about how he could never be far enough away.
Oh, season 2, I liked the love interest of season 2 a little bit better. But it was the third season's book that I listened to in Italy. I think I told you about this, where the whole book, there's no sex scene, and then it finally gets to a sex scene, and that was when all the groomsmen were in my room while I was getting ready. And I was like, I have been waiting for this saucy content. So I'm just curling my hair, looking at all of them. And it was like, he touched her virgin flower. And I'm like, just staring at him. And they were all uncomfortable the whole time. So
I actually remember this, because like your version of like saucy smut is different than like
my version. People's. My version of saucy smut is Bridgerton.
Yeah.
You cannot touch the woman unless you agree to marry her.
Yeah, like that's Chelsea. Like Chelsea read fucking Bridgerton saucy smut, and it was talking about touching flowers gently. Uh-huh. I was told to read Haunted Adeline, which is talking about, like, fucking a girl with a gun.
There's a part where, unmarried, he touches her hand. I had to clutch my pearls, bitch. Crazy, yeah. It's PG-13 smut, because, like, even the smuttiest
PG
part.
Girl touching her hand.
Even like, the part where it's, like, they finally do it. It's like, well, are you ready? And she's like, yes. And then she gasped. And it doesn't even go into the details. And I'm like looking over my shoulder like I'm reading something bad. I'm like, oh my goodness.
That's fucking hilarious.
They definitely, the TV show is definitely like saucier than the book.
Yeah, girl, because like we got to be entertained. Not all of us read like we are 18th century widows like you.
Yeah. So. But it's good. I would recommend it. Or even if you want to just watch the Queen Charlotte one, is actually super cute. It's like a prequel to it, but it's really cute.
Yeah, I see everyone talking about that one a lot too. Yeah, I might give it a try. Who knows? I'm rewatching The Sopranos, so I'm kind of busy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Busy. We're watching The Sopranos. But yeah, speaking of things that are fair in Italian, you can go into the link tree, which is in all of our bios. We're at Go to Hell Podcast. I am at Noelle Fain. That is at Sith Lard. And in that link tree, you can find a link to our Patreon. Dollar get you in. We have the free episode up that was like a filler before Chelsea's surgery. And now we just have the regular episodes up.
Mm-hmm.
Up and forever. If you want to hear real uncensored content, if you want to hear a lot of history of urethras and sounding and what is it called? What did you get done? This
catheter?
Catheter. Yep.
You know, and when I was telling that story, my father-in-law was downstairs and he heard me yelling unladylike.
Well, you know, try getting a metal rod shoved up your pee hole and see how you feel.
Yeah, Jim.
And in that link tree, you can also find a link to our merch. 100% of proceeds are donated. You can also find a link to Kelly Holloran or at Wildwood Owl on Etsy. She makes cool shit for us and she makes cool shit in general. So go check it out. And you can also find, I think we still have resources up there. So please check that out. As always, for supporting Palestine and also I think we still have the families of the veteran fund, the families of veterans.
Oh yeah, I think so. I think that was actually in our show notes for the self-immolation episode.
Yeah, I think I've kept all of those up there. So you could also check those out too. And we have a link to our Discord server, and I don't know why you would need it, but also links to listen to us, which is anywhere podcasts are heard. Oh, and also we're on YouTube. That's what I needed to put in there.
YouTube!
We're on YouTube now, unfortunately. And I actually have some questions about YouTube. I have some questions about YouTube that Google isn't able to answer for me. So if you are rocking YouTube, let me know. Because there are some icons that come up next to our videos sometimes. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah, because I definitely do zero. Zero things with that. Except I go and I like comments and I reply to them. If I know what they're talking about. Some of them are a little nonsensical. I'm not very smart, though, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's on me. If you make YouTube content, hit us up on Discord, please, because I've got some questions about this fucking dashboard. So, anyway, with all that being said, let's get the fuck out of here, and I'm going to give a hail to the blowing of my nose that's going to happen right as soon as we end this, and it's going to feel so good.
I'm going to also give a hail to blowing your nose because I wasn't able to do it for 2 weeks and you don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah, dude. It's just like anytime you're congested, like I am right now, you remember how selfish and stupid you were for taking for granted being able to breathe out of your fucking nose every day.
Yep.
That's a privilege. Yep. So, yep. Okay, let's get the fuck out of here.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Hellsgate is a supernatural roller derby comic book series dripping of blood, demons, and glitter. Saya is a fresh meat skater with a dangerous crush on her favorite derby player. Desperate to be accepted, she attempts to cast a magic spell in hopes of winning her idol's admiration, but instead unleashes a demonic possession that seeks to destroy her and her team at that night's Halloween game. The first issue is out now. Visit hellsgate.com to get your limited edition copy today.